So hi, I'm Kitty Stryker, and I want to talk a little bit about who I am and sort of where I'm coming from in this discussion. I've been a sex worker in both San Francisco and London for about a really long time. And I got into sex work originally because I was in school, and I just didn't have time. I tried the juggling another job and school, and that just didn't work out, and sex work was a little more on my schedule. So I've always had a fascination with human sexuality. I remember my parents saying, "Kitty, can't you be obsessed with something else? Anything? Anything else?" And I said, "No, actually, no, I can't." My parents are now, you know, really accepting, and, you know, they love the work that I do. And one of the things that was really important to me was that I really wanted to help people explore their sexuality. I grew up in a very open-minded household where my parents were pagan and they were totally cool with me being queer. They were cool with me being poly. They were cool with me being kinky. And the more I went out into my communities, I realized that I had a really, you know, bit of luck, really, about how I could just be so open with my family and my friends about the work that I do and about where my exploration and sexuality was going. And as I got into sex work, I realized that a lot of my clients did not have that same luxury. They were growing up in a world where they couldn't talk about sex, they couldn't talk about fantasies, they couldn't talk about the things that that were going on inside their heads. And it was a huge part of my process from a very early age, really, in sex work, to make it more comfortable for them. It was never my goal as a sex worker to have them keep coming to me. I wanted to help them integrate into the greater world. I wanted to help them talk to their partners about sexuality. I wanted to help them have the words that they needed to talk about sex with potential partners. And sex work seemed like a really good way to do that, because automatically, you're in a sexual environment. It wasn't a class. It wasn't a workshop. It was really hands-on. There's a lot of differences in sex work in the U.S. versus the U.K., and I'm not going to talk endlessly about it, but the big one is that it's legal in the U.K., which means that I can be a lot more open and upfront about what it is that I do. If I have a client who calls me and says, "Can you do this thing?" I can say yes or no. You don't really have that in the U.S. That is an arrestable thing. So you have to be very, very careful and very cagey about what you talk about. So because it's legal in the U.K., and it's legal under certain constraints, and if you have questions about that, feel free to talk to me afterwards. But in general, if you're an independent sex worker working indoors, what you do is legal. That means it's a lot safer for you. You can go to the police if you have a problem, which is really, really different from here, where you kind of have to deal with problems by yourself. It also meant that there's a lot less stigma in the UK versus in the US. I could be very open with people at the pub when they ask me what I did. I could tell them. Here, I always kind of worry that they're going to be asking me a lot of questions like, "Oh, but who got you into this?" And like, "Oh my God, were you touched as a child?" And, you know, it's just, it gets a little frustrating because you're kind of like, I just wanted to have a pint. I didn't really want to get into like a psychological discussion here. It's just my job. There's a lot of stigmas about sex workers. Some of them is that like you can't be in a loving relationship. You know, the whole sex worker, "I'm a sex worker, I cannot love" thing that you see in like Pretty Woman or Memoirs of a Geisha. Basically any movie about sex work, the big discussion in the movie is that she's a sex worker. She can only be in a relationship if she gives up sex work. There's the stigma that we hate our jobs. And I would say that there are some people who do. There are some people who go into sex work and they don't want to be sex workers, but it's survival. There are people who really love it. I would say a lot of the people I know feel fairly apathetic about it, you know, like with any job. There's a lot of belief that we're on drugs or that we're trafficked. There's been a lot of discussion in the UK about trafficking. And, you know, I think that it's important to separate discussions of trafficking from discussions of sex work because, you know, trafficking is an immigration issue and it's a poverty issue. It's a class issue. It's often a race issue. Sex work is sometimes intersects with a lot of those things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're the same thing. Also, a lot of people get trafficked for other things like maid service or nannying, and that kind of gets ignored in the big discussion of sex slaves, which is really problematic. And there's also this belief of there being either the girl who is a streetwalker who's dirt poor, or there's the girl who's incredibly wealthy and lives in this luxurious apartment. I'm kind of a gutter punk. Like, I lived in a squat in London. I had a nice place to work, but like, I wasn't living in like a luxurious place. And part of why I did sex work was because it gave me the time and flexibility to only work as much as I needed to survive. And then I could do classes and I could go out and do outreach. I could do a lot more stuff if I was doing sex work. There's also a lot of stigmas about clients. And this is really one of my big sort of things that I like talking about. One of the biggest stigmas about clients is that, oh, you can't have sex any other way. You go to a sex worker because you can't get sex anywhere else. And really, in my experience at least, that's not true. A lot of the clients that I had were really awesome people. They just weren't in a space to be in a relationship at the time, or maybe they had erectile dysfunction and they didn't know how to discuss that with a partner. So they went to a sex worker instead, because the sex worker would be like, okay, that's cool. Like, we can work with this. There's also the stigma that clients hate women. I find that that's a lot more prominent here than it is in the UK, where sex workers can be a lot more out. And my clientele was a much more positive group of people. I had a lot of men who were, and women, which is another stigma, is that all of your clients are men. Not true. I would say about probably about half my clients were men, a fourth of them were couples, and a fourth of them were women. There's this idea that, like, you want to go to a sex worker because you don't respect women. I found that my clients had a lot of respect for me, and maybe that was partially how I advertised as a geeky sex worker who worked with geeks. But I found that a lot of my clients and I had a rapport, which was really cool. There's also the idea that clients are always unattractive, or that they're bad in bed and they're selfish and they just want to go to a sex worker because they want it to be all about them. And that's kind of true. I mean, I've bought sex work because I wanted sex that was about me. I don't see anything wrong with that sometimes, you know, it's not really something you want to demand from your partner. But I think that it ignores that there's a lot of other things going on about why someone goes to a sex worker and why they make that decision. These stigmas are really magnified for people who have disabilities because they're dealing with all of those stereotypes as a client, but they're also dealing with societal stereotypes about sexual desirability, accessibility, whether or not they can actually get to spaces to meet people or get to spaces that are sexual environments, or they kind of can deal with being fetishized, being treated as an object. You know, the whole idea that, are you having sex with me or are you having sex with my wheelchair, for example, is something that comes up. And I empathize a lot with that as someone who is a fat girl, because I deal with that too. I'm not always sure if someone likes me for me or if they like me because, oh yeah, you're BBW, which is kind of a little different and a little othering. So I wanted to start really with a case study. I had a client named Matthew who was a boy about 22 who was about to get married. And he was really struggling. It was kind of an arranged marriage thing. He was a child of a diplomat, and so it was a political marriage. And they really got along with each other, but he was really afraid, because he had cerebral palsy, that he couldn't please his partner. And he didn't know how to have sex with his partner because no one had ever taught him. No one even thought of him as a sexual being. He had a carer his whole life. He had no privacy. He had no opportunity or anyone to ask to do anything sexual with him. So when I met him, he was a virgin with no sexual experience and no idea where to even begin. And a lot of the work that I did with him was teaching him that just because you have cerebral palsy doesn't mean that you can't be a sexual being, and it doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of other things that you can do. And I think that that's really one of the things that comes up a lot is that physical disability is something that's really difficult for people to understand how to interact with sometimes when it comes to sexual situations. Same with mental health issues. There are a lot of things that affect sexuality and sexual communication that come up if you have mental health issues. You might find it harder to say no. You might find it something you feel a lot of guilt about if you have severe depression and you don't want to have sex for a long period of time. You want that to be okay. And it's really difficult when you're in a relationship to say to your partner, I'm really sorry, I just don't have the spoons. You know, I don't have the capability to be in this sexual situation with you. And this is a lot of what I was dealing with a lot of my clients, was they had a lot of anxiety, they had a lot of tension around sex, they had a lot of just closed-offedness, I don't really know how to say it any better, about how do they instigate sexual situations when they can't go to sexual spaces, they can't go and meet people, people don't find them attractive because, you know, they have disabilities and there's no sort of social support for that. There's no examples of attractive people in media that show people with disabilities or mental health issues. It's usually made the butt of a joke, or it's something that is a plot point. It's not just something that's normalized. So one of the things that I tried to do a lot with my work is talk about sex education and the lack of privacy issues and figuring out ways that you can have a sexual life and take into account what your limitations are, and that your limitations are not a bad thing. They're okay. You can have limitations. You can say no. You can give or take away consent. There's also a catch-22. You know, there's a lot of anti-sex work activists in the UK who say, well, you know, who cares that sex workers can provide this service to people with disabilities? People with disabilities don't need sex work services because, you know, they should be loved for who they are, which is great in theory. You know, that's a wonderful ideal. But we live in a world where that is not always true for everyone. And it's not only not necessarily true if you have a disability. If you have any kind of othering with who you are, it can be difficult to get through and actually feel like you're being treated as a sexual being, but also as a human being. So one of the things that really helped me out was when I went to the UK and started doing sex work there, I found a group called the TLC Trust. And the TLC Trust helps connect people with disabilities with sex workers who understand disability activism, and understand different issues around disability and sex. And don't have a stigma about it. Another person I wanted to talk about was a client of mine named Steve, who had a hernia, and he had gone to see a sex worker twice in his life. It was the two times he had ever had sex, and it was the only sex worker who was accessible for him. It was the only one who had a wheelchair accessible space, and she had a lot of stigma about the fact that he had a disability, and she treated him with contempt. And when I saw him and was talking to him about this, because I usually ask them, you know, I ask any of my clients, what experience have you had? He was so depressed. He felt like he would never, ever find anyone who could appreciate him or love him, because if even a woman he paid couldn't pretend to be interested for an hour, how on earth was he ever going to find someone just out and about? And it was so heartbreaking for me. So, you know, one of the things that he found me through the TLC Trust. Many of my clients do. And I really appreciated that they listed languages. You could say that if you had sign work or sign language, you could say that so that people would know. You could talk about whether you had experience with paralysis, if you welcomed personal assistants, personal carers to your space. You could say whether or not the space was accessible, but also whether the bathroom was accessible, which is something that a lot of people don't think about. Even if the space is accessible, if the bathroom isn't, that's not really going to help you. You could mention whether or not you had a hoist over the bed or whether you had experience moving someone from a wheelchair onto a bed. You could talk about whether it was near accessible public transport. And I found that these were things that, while they made a point to talk about this stuff on TLC, other sex work sites that I was on didn't even think about it. They didn't even begin to comprehend that a person with a disability might want to know the answers to these questions. And making a point to say, by the way, I have an accessible space. I do have experience moving someone from their wheelchair onto a bed. This is the amount I can lift. I have experience with catheters. I have experience with all these different things. Meant that clients could go to any sex work site and find me and say, oh, wow, okay, like, you know what I need, and I didn't even have to ask. And that was really, really important. I also really appreciated that the TLC Trust made a point to list male sex workers as well, and trans sex workers, and strippers who would be willing to come to a space that was accessible for the client, BDSM practitioners, erotic massage. Basically, any type of sex work was available on this website, and you could find someone who would be willing to interact with you in that way, who was excited about it and really available for you. And I think that that created a situation where there was a lot of acceptance and open-mindedness, where it wasn't about, oh, I'm a sex worker who only works with people with disabilities because I know you have a lot of issues, which is obviously incredibly othering, but it was, these are things that you might want to know. And I think that that's a really important way for sex work to move forward as a therapeutic process, is to make it not an othering process for any of your clients. I found that a lot of the techniques that I learned from having queer sex and kinky sex was really helpful to me in doing this hands-on sex therapy with my clients. Because if, for example, they had a hard time getting erect, I wouldn't make a big deal out of it. I would just shrug and say, well, that's fine. Like, I've got a thigh harness, or here's a chest harness, or we could try this other thing, or you could watch me while I do something. Like, what are you into? I've got a whole bag of stuff. And they would get really excited. It was no longer, oh, crap, I can't do this one heteronormative thing. I can't have missionary position sex, so therefore I can't have sex. It was, oh, honey, that's just one little bit of sex. There's a whole world out there. Let me show you it. And that made it really playful and fun. And it meant that we could move forward. We could move past, I have a disability and I'm not attractive and, oh my God, I've never had sex before, and move into, ooh, what does this do? And that's a much more accessible and fun way to engage in sex anyway. I also learned a lot about sex toys that were accessible, whether that be toys that had movable parts to make it easier for someone who had limited hand movement to use them, or various sex furniture that could make it easier to put someone in a position that was comfortable for them. And I used a lot of my studies in psychology to help people who had social anxiety or depression issues, to help them figure out ways that they could communicate with a partner. One of my clients was, her name was Trudy, and she had sexual trauma issues. And she had a really hard time being in a relationship with someone because every time she tried to engage with someone sexually, she would get triggered. And her partners had no experience on how to deal with that or how to talk to her. And she didn't have the language at the time to explain to them, this is what it looks like when I'm triggered. This is what I need you to do. So I worked for a while with her on, first with erotic touch, and just saying, anytime you need me to stop, you can tell me to stop. If you want me to do something else, you can totally ask me to do something else. If you don't want me to touch a part of your body, that's okay. And it meant that she had the ability to communicate this to someone else. She could now say, oh, I really want to have sex with you, but I would really prefer it if we don't have penetrative sex today. I would really like if you could play with my nipples instead. Or I'd really appreciate it if, you know, let me show you this vibrator I got. Let's try using that. And so it meant that she could then go to her partner and explain the ways that she wanted to have sex with him in a way that worked for them both. It was no longer, you know, making a difficult compromise. It was now, oh, I learned all these interesting, fun things, and I want to share them with you. Now, different countries have different approaches to sex work and people with disabilities. In the U.S., you can have, there's sort of quasi-legal sexual surrogacy. There are some programs for facilitated sex where someone helps you move into position and is there if you need help. But because of the way that the law is, it can be really difficult to know what's legal and what isn't. And I found with a lot of my clients that if they thought it was illegal and if they thought that, you know, they could get into trouble for booking a sex worker, they wouldn't. So they just they wouldn't engage because they were scared of what might happen to them. In the UK, we had the Think Local, Act Personal sort of program, which gave people with disabilities a personal budget that they could spend however they wanted. Whatever kind of self-care they wanted, they could use this budget for that. And that included things like going to a strip club or seeing a sex worker or going on a trip somewhere that was more accessible than London, which is really not accessible at all. And they created systems where sex work could be built into your personal care package, which I thought was really interesting because it suggested that sex was something that people deserve to have access to in a way that I felt wasn't normally treated with any kind of respect. And they're not the only ones. Germany actually recently had a wellness brothel that made a point to make all of its facilities accessible. So you could go to the sauna, you could go to the hot tubs, all of it was accessible, which I think starting to indicate that this is something people are realizing can be an incredibly important resource to people who don't have very many resources to them when it comes to sex and disability. I mean, I think there's like 2 books about sex and disability and 1 on kink and disability. That's it, which amazes me because it's 2011. Like, these are issues that people talk about all the time. Why is that all that's out there? It just blows my mind. And I think that it's because look at any erotica book. Is there any mention of people with disabilities unless it's about people with disabilities and that's the theme of the book? No. No, there isn't. There's no discussion of mental health issues. I mean, the erotica world is a magical one where condoms just appear and no one has to talk about things and everything's great. But I think that when that's all you see, it becomes incredibly stigmatizing. And it becomes really difficult to know how you can have experiences yourself when you're out and about, because again, there's no model. There's no example for you. Australia also has a training program that you can take that helps sex workers learn about managing things like catheters and spasms and sexual abuse histories. You can go to a weekend-long program and learn about all these different things, and they have a certificate process. So you can say, I am certified in understanding different accessibility issues and understanding how to communicate with you and how to help you, how to deal with some of the physical constraints that you have in ways that make it a positive experience, which I think is fantastic. So one of the things that was really fascinating to me, because when I first started in sex work, I didn't really engage in social media. I didn't really engage with, you know, anything. I had like an ad in the paper or something, you know, back in the day. When I went to London, I started using social media a lot more. I started a blog, and I started writing a lot about politics, queer politics, disability politics, race, class, all of these things in my blog, which was linked to my my professional website. And I found it really fascinating that only a few of my clients had not read my blog. Most of them had read my blog. And they would say, wow, the reason I was interested in you was because you talk about things I think about all the time. And you talk about politics, and you're queer, and I didn't even know that there were sex workers like you in the world. I had no idea, because it's such, again, it's such a heteronormative world in what you see sort of advertised or what you see in the media. When you see a sex worker, there's a stigma there. And when you see a client, there's a stigma there. And I was really flattered that people were interested and that people were excited and they wanted to get to know who I was. And again, it's that respect thing. And we would sit down usually at the beginning of a session, have tea, and talk about things for about 15, 20 minutes and create a system of care, I would say. Talk about things like, you know, what physical limitations do you have? Have you had any surgery recently? You know, what is it that you're interested in today? Like, what were you looking for from this experience? I think that social media has given both sex workers and people with disabilities a lot more of a voice. You no longer have to go to a specific place. You can be on the internet and speak out and people will hear you. I think that it also gives lovers an opportunity to share strategies. Like I mentioned the spoon theory earlier, which was written by a girl who had lupus, and she talks about how she only has a certain number of spoons any given day, and that every activity that she does, getting dressed and eating breakfast, takes some spoons away, and that she only has so many. So sometimes it's too difficult after she's used up all of her spoons to get to work to even make dinner when she gets home. As a sex worker, that was really handy because I could explain this to my clients and I could ask them what they had the spoons for. And is this activity, is that two spoons or is that half a spoon? Is that going to be really difficult for you or is that going to be easier for you? Which meant that we had a language that we could share. There's also, in the sex worker sphere, there's the video Every Hoe I Know Says So, which is about sex workers talking to their lovers about what it's like to be a sex worker and what they want from their partners, which again sparked some really amazing conversations with my partner about what I needed from him and the sort of support I needed. So I think that social media has created a space where I can now, I don't have to come up with all of this stuff myself. I can now link to someone else who said it better and say, check this out, tell me what you think. And it takes a lot of the pressure off. A lot of sex workers advertise and talk to clients and fans via Twitter or Facebook or Tumblr. Some of these sites are not entirely accessible. There is a thing called Accessible Twitter that helps with various types of disability issues so that you can use Twitter more easily. Facebook tries to be accessible and then messes it up every time they change their layout. I guess it's good they're making an effort, but you know, it'd be kind of nice if they were consistent and thought about that. And I think that the fact that they don't always think about it until someone complains is exactly the problem that people who have disabilities deal with all the time, is that they're not thought about unless it's an afterthought. One of the things I did when building my site was to make sure that I didn't use Flash, because Flash is not only difficult for iPhones and things like that, but also makes it really difficult if you have accessibility issues to read a lot of the content. So by making sure that I had buttons on my front page that clients could click on, it meant that they could then have access to all the information they needed on my site without having to do the embarrassing thing, perhaps, of asking their care assistant to help them or having to just go without and just not have the knowledge. I also found that a lot of the times it's helpful to have like text descriptions of photos and captions for videos, transcripts for podcasts to help communicate in a variety of different ways. Again, making it accessible. And the more that I made these efforts, the more I opened myself up to clients who were like, you're the only person who does this. I don't know anyone else. I don't even know how to talk to a random sex worker that I find their website because I can't read anything that they say, and I can't see it, or I can't hear it. Having multiple methods to get in touch means that it's possible for you to find different ways to engage with your clients. I try to be very emotionally and personally accessible to them, so I'm very chatty with a lot of my clients. A lot of my clients are friends of mine now. I make a big effort of bringing them to accessible spaces so that they know where they are, and they know, wow, I'd really like to go to a kinky party. Well, here you go. Here's a kinky party that has lift access and has people who are there to help you. Because again, there's not really much in the way of resources for that. Being an independent sex worker, of course, means that you get to choose to work in an accessible space, or you get to choose to go on out calls to hotels that are accessible for your clients. In London, a lot of the spaces weren't accessible, so I used to go to the airport a lot. And for my clients who had disabilities, I said, don't worry about the travel expense. I'll deal with that. But, you know, I want you to be in a hotel that's easy for you. And again, it was that shared mutual respect where they felt like they didn't have to beg me or cajole me. It was just understood. And ultimately, I think that creating a sort of therapeutic model for sex work, both as a sex worker myself and also just sort of on a government and political level, it means that you can help give people who struggle with their sexual expression go to someone who's a trained professional who knows what to do and knows how to have these conversations, knows how to talk about consent negotiation, and can give various clients ways to then go out and talk to potential partners. I've helped some of my clients with personal website stuff or like on Match.com or whatever, you know, helping them write up an ad that really expresses them and doesn't stigmatize them. And I kind of wanted to finish on one of my last sort of case studies. I had a client when I first started working in London named Chris, who had social anxiety, really bad social anxiety. It was such an effort for him to come and see me because he was scared of public transport. And the first session, we spent most of the time cuddling and watching IT Crowd, because that's what he had the spoons for. And I was like, that's totally cool. I love the IT Crowd. Awesome. And over time, because he became one of my regulars, we would start doing things like going to the corner cafe and having a coffee and seeing how that went. Or we'd go for a walk and see how that went. And it was sort of little baby steps and being willing to take it down a notch if that was too much, showing him ways that he could engage with me sexually. Like, he really liked snuggling up next to me while I used a Hitachi because he liked being there for me and like nibbling on my neck while I was having an orgasm. And that was something that made it very accessible for him. He was like, I could do that. That's really cool. I didn't think about that as sex. And making that open and sort of giving him that opportunity was really special. And I'm really, really happy because now he has a partner. And when I met him, he didn't think he was ever going to be able to find someone. He didn't think he would ever meet somebody. I think he met her on Flickr, actually, which I thought was really cool. And I never thought of Flickr as like a dating site, but hey. And we were talking a lot about his relationship with her, and he said that like now he felt like he could say no, and now he felt like he knew how to say yes, and he knew how to make it easier to enjoy a romantic and sexual relationship because I had kind of helped him challenge his social anxiety, but also gave him the space to say, I can't today. That's not something I can do. And I was so chuffed when he told me that he had a partner and that they've been dating for like a year. Because that's what I do sex work for. I am not doing it because I want to be wealthy, because man, that's not going to happen doing the kind of work I do. But I did it because I wanted to help people. and I wanted to do hands-on sex therapy in a way that was financially and physically accessible for people who may not have other resources. And so I think that in that way, I found that being able to mesh sex work and disability through shared stigma and through a shared understanding of the lack of respect that the world had for us both, I ended up finding my true calling, which was to help bridge the gap and help make it so that I was a stepping stone for the clients I saw into a greater, hopefully wilder, sexual landscape. So